Hi, folks. Galen Clavio here. Welcome to the Bracket Racket. As we got a little bit of a late start, not nearly as late as the NASCAR race did today, but happy to be with you as we get set for another hour or so of conversation on the world of college basketball. We do have David Griggs joining us at some point. He is he's having some technical issues, let's put it that way. But we do have Kyle Lamb with us. Kyle, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing wonderful, but just to warn you, I'm experiencing network difficulties. At least that's what Google tells me. Season for difficulties.
This could be a very short broadcast, so we'll try to keep it together for as long as we can. As we go through here, actually, I think David Griggs is joining us now. Finally, David, you're back.
It's just ridiculous. The people around here. My God, they just kicked me off the air.
You sound indignant, David Griggs.
My God.
Okay. Go ahead. Are you okay? Your lighting isn't as good as it normally is. I noticed that.
Well, that should be coming back. Let's see if that can. I mean, it's just the people around here. They can't move a computer without kicking out a cord around here.
You'd think they would own MacBooks at this point.
You would think.
You'd have enough money for that in your organization, but hey, whatever. Right. Anyway, we need to jump right into things as we've got a lot of basketball to talk about. It was an interesting week, we'll pick the story up around midweek and kind of move forward from there. Some big games yesterday and today. Yesterday, Kyle was billed as some kind of one of those one-time-per-season events when all the cosmic forces align and basketball is played the way that it should be. I don't know if we quite got that, but we did get some pretty good games, and let's start in Cincinnati. We've been waiting patiently for Louisville to show up in a big game, and they did so in this one. A real back-and-forth contest, but Louisville knocks off the number 7 Cincinnati Bearcats 58-57. And really, I mean, I was kind of impressed with both of these teams, but Louisville, they had a couple of chances to fold in this contest, and they did not.
Yeah, let's be clear here. Louisville showed up yesterday, but they left a little too early.
And then they came back.
Yeah, they checked out with about 5 minutes to go, and fortunately they were able to recover the last 30 seconds of the game. But what a just a remarkable shot by Russ Smith, with 2 seconds left on the clock. It was probably not a very good shot.
What do you expect?
Yeah, it's not what Louisville wanted out of that possession, but they got the shot to go in nonetheless, and a big road win for Louisville. Their profile, out of all the teams out there that have a chance of a protected seed, Louisville by far probably has the worst profile. So they needed that win in a bad, bad way. Good win. Still not exactly sure how good Cincinnati is yet, but it is a good win for Louisville nonetheless.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting that Cincinnati lost the game despite really doing what they do, which is hold opponents to less than a point per possession. I mean, they're still, I think, the fifth best defense from an efficiency standpoint in the country. They held Louisville to 58 points on 63 possessions. Their problem was their offense just wasn't able to show up, and that has been a bit of an issue for this team, albeit not that often. I mean, they've really had a very, I think, impressive season just in terms of the wins that they've racked up as far as numbers are concerned. I think the number, the question still linger as far as Cincinnati's concerned. As far as Louisville, I mean, I think they needed this win. Like, when you look at their record thus far, their best win really had been UConn on the road. And that's a good win, but, I mean, SMU won at UConn today. So it's not something that just the elites are doing. So winning at Cincinnati, I think that's a very important step for them. No one had won at Cincinnati so far this year. So a good win for the Cardinals, and I think that any thoughts from you on this game, David Griggs?
Well, yeah, it was a good win for Louisville. Normally, when Cincinnati loses, they haven't lost many games at all. But when they have lost, they've not messed around in doing so. Like, I mean, normally it's 10 points, 15, 20. It was exactly what Louisville needed. Their ranking, at least in the coaches and AP poll, did not match their profile at all. I mean, it was way, way more. And you're starting to wonder, are we going to have a top 10 team down on the fifth or the sixth line? But yesterday's win, it was exactly what they needed. A big win on the road.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, and so Louisville.
Just one more thought. I mean, I guess you're aware of this. This wasn't a huge rivalry in the sense that Kentucky and Memphis was back in the day, but it might be the last time they play each other for a while. I'm kind of sad to see the series end.
Well, I mean, there is obviously the possibility they'll play in the AAC tournament, but that is a good point. I mean, this is a rivalry that goes back to the Metro days and
Missouri Valley before that.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's been one that's been around for a while. The AAC, we need to talk about the other game that happened, but Cincinnati's still with a half-game lead on Louisville, and they split the season series. So some interesting implications as far as seeding in the AAC tournament. Louisville had to have this game if they wanted to have a shot at being the number one seed in that tournament. Now today, SMU, who's been on a little bit of a roller coaster lately with the loss to Temple last week and then a kind of a struggle against Houston at home on Wednesday, they really answer in a big way. They knock off UConn on the road 64-55 today. And, you know, it's tough because you look at SMU, David, and they lose to South Florida. They lose to Temple. Granted, both those games were on the road, but those aren't really losses that a serious contender you would think would make. But they've bounced back really nicely from both of those losses. They beat Memphis and Cincinnati at home, and now they beat UConn on the road. What's your feel on this SMU team? Like, where do you see? Obviously, I think at this point they're almost certainly getting into the tournament. Where do you see them right now in the seed mix?
I still think they're around the 9 or the 10 line, like inside the bubble, but still close enough to it to reach. They really were kind of home court heroes prior to this UConn game. I think they had 4 wins on the road, but they were against sub-NIT competition, right. And they had some really bad losses away from home. This really helps their profile immensely. I would argue that it's the single best win that they have. In fact, it might not even be close. They have some notable wins, but like you said, they were all at home. So, again, I think this puts them inside the bubble rather safely, but I don't see them above the 9 line.
Kyle, overall, looking at the AAC now, I mean, I feel like we've got 4 teams that can be pretty decent as they move forward in the tournament. I mean, I don't know that anybody is really a world beater per se. I mean, Louisville is very highly regarded by KenPom, but you know, it feels like we got a nice solid core of 5 teams now, and I think that's more than we expected coming out of this conference at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, you know, I have a hard time taking any of them seriously as Cincinnati is. I'm kind of on the fence with. I have a hard time taking the rest of them seriously as second weekend type of teams. Now, Louisville, I know there are some people out there that still think Louisville is a Final Four type of team. I mean, in fairness, they have beat up on the teams that they should beat up on, and that's what, you know, Final Four type of teams generally do. But I don't know. I do think that they are probably the one team in the AAC right now that I really think can make a run in the tournament. Cincinnati, maybe. The other ones are good teams. I have a hard time seeing any of the other ones making it to the second week of the tournament, though.
Yeah. I mean, from a schedule perspective, you know, it's interesting because Louisville has only played against the 133rd toughest schedule in the country. I mean, that's not really championship caliber opposition. Cincinnati, their strength of schedule is 117. UConn's actually, I think, got the best strength of schedule overall. They have a strength of schedule of 72. You know, it's one of those things where I like the pieces on all these teams, I agree with you, but it's hard to envision any of them really making a serious run at the Elite Eight or the Final Four. So let's switch gears, let's switch conferences, guys, and let's jump over to the Big Ten. Big game today, and it was big in large part because of what happened before, but I want to talk about it first. Michigan, in a bit of a surprise, completes the season sweep on their cross-state rivals, Michigan State. They win this one 79-70, and they move to 11-3 overall in the conference, 19-7 overall. And for a Michigan team that just lost at home pretty handily to Wisconsin last week, I don't know that anybody was necessarily expecting them to look as good as they did against Michigan State. But Kyle, you know, just, you know, really an excellent game from Nick Stauskas, 25 points. Caris LeVert with 23 points. Those two plus Glenn Robinson really carried this Michigan squad. And it's interesting because, you know, you get a good game from Gary Harris for Michigan State, but they're still not really firing on all cylinders.
Tom Izzo would like to remind you that they still are not at full strength.
Right.
I mean, they can't go a game without reminding you of that.
Of course.
You know, look, I this is a game where, to be honest, you know, Michigan State can make all the excuses they want, you know, that they're not full strength, yada, yada, yada. But full strength or not, they played lousy defense today. Actually, they didn't play defense on Stauskas, as you mentioned, 25 points, and he just lit them up. And it was kind of surprising, I heard Bill Raftery mention this on the broadcast. It was kind of surprising, given how Indiana, Ohio State, and some of the teams before them had defended Stauskas relatively well. It was surprising that Michigan State didn't take that same defensive strategy and putting a smaller guy on Stauskas, because it seemed to be working, and they didn't do it, and they really paid the price for it. As Stauskas got rolling and Michigan was hitting shots because of it, everything else just seemed to flow. This was a big win for Michigan. I think that Michigan probably clinched the number one seed in the tournament today. They haven't obviously clinched an outright title yet, but I think because of the two wins against Michigan State head-to-head, they're probably going to go into the Big Ten tournament as the one seed.
Yeah, it seems logical at this point. I mean, 11-3 at Michigan now, and really, even though Michigan State's only a loss behind them, in reality, they're two games back because of the head-to-head there. And then, you know, you go back beyond that. Wisconsin's got five losses. Iowa's got five losses. And that's really it. There's not anybody else that's even close to competing.
Nebraska.
Nebraska is not close to competing for a Big Ten title. That's six losses back. Let's just stop that nonsense right now.
You never know.
They're really good.
Yes. You get reminded by you guys of that every day, I think, maybe three or four times a day.
Tom Crean's a good coach.
Thank you. Yeah. Now, obviously earlier on in the week, Wisconsin, and by earlier on in the week I mean yesterday, they knock off Iowa. They complete the season sweep of that series. And so now Wisconsin with a lead on Iowa, even though they're tied in the loss column, effectively Wisconsin leads by a game. And Wisconsin, with a fairly easy run out. I mean, they've got Indiana, Penn State, Purdue, and then they have to travel to Nebraska. That is the toughest game they have remaining. Iowa with a much tougher run out. They still have Minnesota and Indiana on the road and Michigan State on the road, and they have Purdue and Illinois at home. David, I talked last week about how I thought this Iowa team was a little flaky, and I think even though they've performed well, I mean, they beat Michigan handily at the beginning of 2 weeks ago, they just haven't been able to take care of business when they needed to at home, and it's really cost them a shot at the Big Ten title when it was wide open for the taking.
Yeah, it has, and again, it's just it is kind of surprising to see them drop games at home, especially, I mean, you put it best, flaky, bipolar, schizophrenic, however you want to put it, but I don't know. I mean, Wisconsin played really well. You don't want to take anything away from them.
Sure.
But, again, you kind of expect them to beat Ohio State and Whiskey at home.
Well, I tell you, I mean, Wisconsin at this point, for all the people that were shoveling dirt on them, don't look now, but they've won five in a row. And included in those five were wins against Michigan State at home and then at Michigan and at Iowa. I mean, that's three really tough games to try to pull off. And it's hard to reconcile that team with the team that lost at home to Northwestern and the team that lost on the road to Indiana. I mean, it's really been a Jekyll and Hyde sort of thing. But, you know, Kyle, we kind of gave up on Wisconsin, I feel like, collectively. We said, okay, that 16-0 start that they had was illusory. But this is starting to look like a dangerous team again as we get closer to the tournament. And, you know, they win three of their last four. You know, suddenly they're sitting on 25 wins. They're sitting on a 12-6 record, maybe a 13-5 record in a conference. I don't want to play these guys come tournament time, regardless of whether it's the Big Ten tournament or the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I mean, they really have come on strong. A lot of it's, they've got consistent production on Nigel Hayes, but Bronson Koenig lately has really looked good off the bench. You know what you're going to get out of Trayvon Jackson, for better or worse. But, you know, the scary thing is, during this resurgence, they're actually doing it without Sam Decker playing all that well.
Right.
And that's what scares me even more, is because they reeled off five very good wins in a row, and I don't even think they're playing their best basketball yet. That's kind of, you know, scary. I definitely think Wisconsin is starting to show signs of a team that can make a deep run in the tournament. You know, they're still a little schizophrenic on defense, but they're playing really well right now.
Now, before we leave the Big Ten, we need to jump to your guys' favorite team, and the team that is the second-best defensive team in the Big Ten Conference, which I wouldn't have believed if I hadn't seen the numbers myself. But Nebraska, they're just hanging around right now. They're sitting back there in sixth. They've taken over the mantle of the final at-large spot from Minnesota, who, I mean, forget Minnesota. They look to be an absolute free-fall at this stage. But Nebraska, 16-10, 8-6 in the conference. Interesting last four games here, as they've got Illinois on the road, Northwestern at home, Indiana on the road, and then Wisconsin to finish things off a couple of Sundays from now. David, I want to start with you on this, because I know Kyle's got a bunch to say, and I want to make sure we get your thoughts first. But if you were a betting thing, like a betting being of some sort.
Well, it's not fair for me to bet, because I already know the outcomes.
Well,
I know everything.
Yes.
I mean, well, I'm essentially taking your money if you want to bet me. I mean,
if you didn't have those powers, let's just pretend for a minute.
Okay, yeah.
Who would be your choice, what would be your choice here for Nebraska? Do they win enough games to make it into the NCAA tournament this year?
I think they do, and the reason is their schedule in conference was a little front-loaded, and so they got that out of the way. That, and if you believe in the eye test, I believe in my own eye test, other people's not so much, but they are playing better now than they have at any point during the year. You know, they were okay out of conference, but there was no evidence that they were going to be this good. And if you watch them, there's nothing spectacular about them. If you like highlight reels, Nebraska's probably not your team. But they work to take good shots. They take good open shots. They play tough defense. They get in the position, the rebound. The ball is shot. They don't sit there and watch it like what I call ball watching. They run in the position to get the rebound on defense. Well, you know,
I like how you've decided that you're the one that coined the phrase ball watching. That's excellent. Okay, keep going.
Okay, yeah. Well, if somebody else is using that, they got that from me. But they're just playing. They're getting back to the point. They are better now than they've been at any point in the season, and their schedule is more manageable now than it was when conference play began. I think 3 out of 4 is enough. I wouldn't be surprised if they won all 4. Wisconsin's very good, but Nebraska is very tough to beat at home. And not only that, but, I mean, if they win 3 out of 4 and avoid a loss in their first Big Ten tournament game, I think that not only are they in the field, they're probably inside the first 4.
Well, that'll be the interesting thing, Kyle. And, you know, it's going back to style of play. It's interesting. Nebraska's doing kind of what Northwestern was trying to do, which is match an inarticulate offense with a really tight, hard-nosed defense. And Northwestern kind of gave up the ghost about two-thirds of the way through the conference schedule. But Nebraska's been able to stick with it. This despite the fact that their shooting is really very bad. I mean, they are 223rd in the nation in effective field goal shooting. They're not getting any offensive rebounds of note. And yet they've managed to avoid turnovers. They keep the other team off the glass, and you know it's been really impressive what Tim Miles has done. I'm really curious if you think that they're going to be able to pull this off. I mean, I kind of know the answer already, but what do you think?
Well, you know, all joking aside, you know, despite the fact I called this back on November 8th in a conversation, I even said that they would finish no worse than 7th in the Big Ten. Did I not say that, Galen?
November 8th, 2013. It's true.
I really think that they are playing like a tournament team now. I really think the last 3-4 games especially, they have looked like a tournament team. Now, I will say, their profile obviously still has a lot of work to do, and they're in a position where they can't afford any mistakes right now. I think it's 50-50 as to whether they pull it off, just because if they lose to Illinois or Northwestern, you know, that could be enough to keep them outside the bubble. So that,
or Indiana. Or Indiana.
Yeah, or Indiana. they have got to take care of at least these next two games for sure. So I do think the way they're playing right now, they're getting a lot of easy baskets off their defense. They've got some good athletes. Like you said, they don't shoot the ball well, but because they're getting so much offense off of their defense right now, it's really helping their offense out. They've looked absolutely awesome the last three games. I think if they keep playing the way they have these last three games, I think they'll get it done.
Well, I will say this. If you're worried about letdowns, and I think that's natural given the lineup they've got over the next three games, they had a chance to let down in these last two home games against Penn State and Purdue, both teams that they lost to earlier on in the year, and they clobbered both of them. I mean, 13-point win over Penn State on Thursday, and then a 20-point win, basically, over Purdue today. And while both those teams are kind of taking on water at this stage, that's still impressive, and that points, I think, to the mentality of the team. So definitely a team worth keeping an eye on, and that's really it for the Big Ten. I mean, there's nobody else getting into the tournament at this stage. I guess maybe Minnesota could squeeze in if they won their last three. They've got Iowa at home, they're at Michigan, and they've got Penn State at home. That would make them 9-9. I don't think so much damage has been done to them that they're an unclaimable project, but they have to win those three games and probably win one game in the Big Ten tournament.
I think Minnesota can even get in with two out of three if they win one in the tournament. I think it'll be close, but I think that they've got to...
I think they got to get past the quarters.
I guess my big issue with them is if you look at their wins outside of conference, their best two wins are against teams that likely will not be in the tournament. I mean, Richmond on the road and then Florida State at home. Even with the win today, Florida State probably still not in the field. So that's the only thing.
This is actually an interesting microcosm to see how the committee treats a team like this, because just statistically speaking, Minnesota's non-conference schedule was tough from an RPI standpoint. I think it was top 30 non-conference. Now, if you look at individual games that they played, there's nobody that really jumps out at you, at least the ones that they won anyways. So it'll be interesting to see how the committee deals with that kind of a profile.
Well, I will say KenPom not impressed with their non-conference schedule, ranks at 232nd. But
32nd versus 200, that's a slight statistical difference. I mean,
Oh, the RPI is a
just a little bit of a discrepancy there.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk some other games. Of course, the big one yesterday that everybody was talking about, Duke-Syracuse. And this one will not be remembered for being a good game, and it was, I think, overall. I mean, it was a little stodgy. Two teams playing relatively slow. Both of them scored a point per possession or better. But everybody's going to remember this for the absolute tirade that Jim Boeheim threw at the end of the game, getting himself thrown out, really taking what was still a one-possession game and putting it out of reach for his team.
That reminds me of one of David Griggs' classical moments there at the end.
Yes. What he just did when his computer got the power cord taken out.
Well, I think that's people of mine.
Did you rip your coat off when that happened? That's my big question for you, David.
Yes. Okay. I mean, it was. I'm just glad that I was disconnected so you couldn't see what.
How did you rip your coat off since you don't have hands?
It's kind of hard to explain. Okay. I mean, you just have to use your imagination.
I'm kind of glad I didn't see that. Right. Anyway, but the explanation that Boeheim, you know, he had a chance in the postgame press conference to say, you know what, I lost my head, I blew it, it happens. Everybody would have been fine with that. But no, he went into the press conference and doubled down and said that the block charge call that was called a charge was the worst call of the season, and, you know, just very conspiratorial. I mean, I know I can't tell if he's serious about this or if he's just trying to get favorable calls when the ACC tournament comes, but, I mean, talk about a disproportionate response. I mean, to me, it was a bang-bang play. You're at Cameron. You're not going to get that call if you're the visiting team. It's just kind of a given. David, I don't know, did you see it differently than me, or were you on board with that?
I really thought it was a 50-50 call. It probably, my preference would have just been to not call anything. But I guess, like, with contact, you had to call something. I think it could have gone either way. It looked like a block to me, but it was too close to call. That's as far as the call itself goes. One of the things is, you know, the block charge call, Jim Boeheim did make reference to how that is the new rule and it should have been a block. At least that's how he feels. I'm pretty sure running out onto the floor and screaming at the top of your lungs an inch from the referee's face, that being a technical foul is an old rule. Is it not?
it's been on the books for a while. Yes, it has.
Yeah, so I think they got the technical foul right. And, I mean, I love a good meltdown every now and then. It's fun to see. But imagine, in all seriousness, sometimes you can't just do that. And, yes, sometimes it sucks. But what if that had been a player and not a coach? Like, why is it players aren't allowed to flip out and completely flip their shit? I mean, had that been a player, everybody's reaction would have been entirely different. He probably would have been suspended for multiple games, maybe kicked off the team. Yet when a coach who's supposed to be the leader absolutely flips out, it's okay. And I've made references to this before. The majority of the time a coach gets a technical foul, he's basically slapping his players in the face. And I just think that that's what Boeheim did. The players didn't lose their cool. The assistants didn't lose their cool. I mean, how come Boeheim gets to flip out? And I know I'm picking on Boeheim a little bit. It's just a little frustrating to me when I see a coach basically take a crap on his players, which is what happens when they're getting technical fouls. They're giving the other team 2 points.
Kyle, you want to respond to that?
I don't even know where to begin. There's a lot I could say here. Look, I agree with David about one thing. I don't agree. I think there's time and place for a technical foul. That was not it. You know, even despite the block charge, it's a 2-point game. It's a 1-possession game. It's a 1-1 for Duke. They still had a chance. You know, the Duke could miss the free throw or miss one free throw, and they'd still get the ball back with a chance to tie or even win. So that was a bad time for Boeheim to just lose it. There was 12 seconds left. There was plenty of time. He absolutely cost his team a chance at the game. Now, as far as the block charge, I think it's a 50-50 call. I still actually think it was a charge after watching it over several times. I could be swayed either way, but I thought it was a charge personally. But the point is, yeah, if Boeheim is looking for future calls in the ACC, he's going about it all wrong. I mean, he went so far in the press conference actually to accuse the ACC of a conspiracy against them because Maryland had 5 days off in preparation for the game. It's just, you know, if he wants a reprieve from the ACC, he's not going about it very well.
Well, did you hear what came out today? I mean, there was a different take on it. I thought this was interesting. It turns out that athletic directors were in meetings while the game was going on. And at that moment, he had just gotten word that a series between Kansas and Missouri had fallen through.
For God's sake.
I'm turning
you off right now. Okay, you just got the mute button. Sorry. You're muted. I'm gonna let you out of purgatory in about 3 minutes. You look like Kermit the Frog right now. I just wanted to let you know that. Anyway.
I think he's cursing you.
I will say this. I think that the way that we've got to look at this, I think you're right, Kyle. There's a time and a place for technical fouls. Some of them can be strategic. Some of them can be good. Some of them can spur your team on. I don't think we see that here. I think Boeheim thought the game was over at that point, which he shouldn't have. I mean, they were still in the game. But I just don't see what point he's trying to make. I mean, take your medicine, move on. Don't bring it into the press conference. I just don't see the point. So, you know, what's interesting is Syracuse, I almost feel like Boeheim may be trying to set this up now as some kind of an excuse for his team struggling over the next couple of weeks, because now they've lost two in a row. They have a whole week off, they have 2 days off and they play Maryland. Then they have almost a whole week off and they have to go to Virginia. They still have Florida State on the road on the schedule. We mused about this last week, Kyle, but, I mean, they could end up with 5 losses by the end of the year, and that would take them probably out of 1-seed contention.
Yeah, they're in a lot of trouble right now. Their offense has just not been the same for the last 3 weeks of the season, and the schedule is obviously not very favorable, and I'm sure that's the ACC trying to do them in. But, you know,
we needed more conspiratorially minded coaches in the ACC. We didn't have enough already, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, look, this Virginia game was going to be hard enough, but the Maryland game is even more difficult. Not really because of the time in between, but just because Maryland is playing a lot better basketball right now. They're not going to have the profile to get in the NCAA tournament, but they're playing a lot better. And, you know, if knowing that they need this game to go to Virginia just to stay in the ACC race, well, that's two tough games in a row to have to win, especially when you're coming off a loss to Duke and a loss to BC before that. Right. So, Syracuse is not in a very good way right now. And if they win, you know, if they win both of these games, they deserve a lot of credit because it's going to be a tough week for them.
All right, we're going to let David Griggs out of purgatory here if I can figure out how to do that. I might not be able to get him out of purgatory, actually. Now, I'm afraid your mute button is permanent, so I'm going to have to eject you from the broadcast. We cannot hear you, David Griggs. So I'm sorry. We're going to kick you off the broadcast. Oh, there it is. Wait a minute. You back?
You muted him again.
I muted him again. Okay. Okay.
And anyway, Bayside Valley, Kansas, Missouri is the best rival.
God. I should have just kicked him out completely. Anyway, let's move on. A few other games I wanted to talk about before we move on to the upcoming week's games. From yesterday, another big result here, and David, I'm going to throw this one to you. New Mexico just slaughters San Diego State. San Diego State's worst performance of the year. They've had trouble in the pit in the past, but this is among their worst appearances. This is a team you were talking about as possibly contending for a one seed about a month ago.
I went back and deleted that.
Yeah, no.
You
didn't delete it from my brain, so where do you see them now?
Well, after watching them yesterday and seeing them lose at Wyoming, I'm starting to think that maybe I was a little bit wrong when I thought that this team was going to get a one seed.
Just slightly.
I don't see them up on the one line. It was surprising. They've struggled at the pit before, but out of all the teams in the Valley, in the Mountain West, they were one of the more successful teams at New Mexico. I'm sure you and Kyle know. New Mexico is a snake pit. Even when New Mexico's not good, they're hard to beat at home. But, I mean, San Diego State just went in there and got absolutely drilled. I think the three line is their ceiling. Ultimately, I think that's where they're going to end up. But even winning out won't get them above the three line.
It is called the pit for a reason.
It is, yeah. Yes. I will say this. You look at the schedule, and New Mexico's got another shot at San Diego State, and they've got three horrific games between now and then. I mean, New Mexico is probably going to be 15-2 going into that game at Viejas at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, and I was going to say, it would not surprise me if it was close to as lopsided, if not more so, than the one we just saw. I mean, neither of those teams, they've had some really good games, but neither one of them are particularly strong on the road, and both of them are nearly impossible to beat at home. I think San Diego State might kill them again, and then it's just an issue. If they meet in the conference tournament, then we'll see an equal terms game.
Well, the thing is, though, if you look at San Diego State, they have to travel to Fresno, and they have to travel to UNLV, and those are not going to be easy games. I mean,
right.
UNLV has rallied. I mean, they're 8-6 now in a conference. They're 17-10 overall. Fresno isn't having that great of a year, but they're still hovering around the 500 mark. So it could be a situation where San Diego State has to win that final game just to forge a tie in the Mountain West, and that would be an interesting situation. I think right now, Kyle, would you agree with me, it's just those two teams in contention for an NCAA tournament berth? Do you see anybody else out of this conference?
Yeah, I think Boise and UNLV are way too far off. I mean, they're both good, especially, you know, now that UNLV is kind of right of the ship a bit. They're both good teams. I don't think either one's going to have a profile that's going to support them getting in. Yeah. So I think it's a two-trick pony unless both of them lose in the tournament, and then you'll get a third bid.
Let's jump over and talk a little bit more from this past week. We had a couple of games of interest coming out of the Big 12 yesterday. Kansas just annihilated Texas. That was not really a surprise. Baylor finally showing some signs of life, and so is Oklahoma State, as both of those teams registered much-needed victories. So now you have a situation where has Kansas clinched yet? If not, they will tomorrow, I think. Or because they play Oklahoma. If they win that game, I think they clinch because they'll be 13-2 with three games to play. Then you got Iowa State, Oklahoma, Texas, all at 9-5. I think they're all safely in. You get below that mark, Kyle. We've talked a lot about these teams having a chance at getting into the field, but you know, we're talking about Kansas State, West Virginia, Baylor, Oklahoma State is really our four possibilities. West Virginia's lost two in a row now, including that loss to Baylor at home. Who do you like coming out of that pack?
I mean, I think Baylor is in really good shape now. I think Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas, and even Kansas State, kind of a home court hero, but I think they've done enough. They should be fine. So I think those four get in. I think Baylor will get in. I'm not as down on Oklahoma State's profile or, you know, at least, you know, status with the committee as everybody else. I think with Marcus Smart back, they certainly looked a lot better yesterday against Texas Tech. They blew them out like they should. I think they're going to right the ship. They're going to get hot here at the end. I think Oklahoma State will get back in. I think you're going to end up seeing 6 or 7 for the Big 12.
Who do you not like out of the group then? West Virginia?
Well, West Virginia, I think, is dead. I think they had a couple good chances to go on the road and get good wins. They blew it. I just don't think they're going to have enough on the resume to get over the hump without the lack of good road wins. So I think West Virginia is the odd man out there.
All right.
I agree.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's move on to another conference then, and while we got some time, the SEC again.
Oh!
I know, but that's what you get for not having original thoughts. You know, I mean, I warned you about that.
Well,
but
there is a team in the SEC that I would love to see in the Big 12.
But... yeah, let's just keep talking. I don't know if people realize this because they never show the full standings. There are 7 teams that are 7-7 in the SEC. If there's anything that screams mediocrity, that has to be it.
Right.
Tennessee, God, they just do themselves no favors. They lose on the road to A&M. That's 3 out of their last 4 that they've lost. Now, they have a relatively easy run out the rest of the way, but they're 16-11 right now. Do they have to win all 4 of these games to get themselves into the tournament at this point, David?
To be safe, yes. I mean, if they win 3 of the 4 and then play their way into the semis and beat somebody good along the way, maybe. But, yeah, I mean, you have Florida and Kentucky ahead of everyone else. LSU would, I think, have been on the right side of the bubble had they won the other day. But I'm just not impressed at all with Tennessee. I mean, not at all. And really, with no one else in this league, I really have a hard time arguing for anyone other than Florida and Kentucky. Missouri loses at all. I mean, they lost at Alabama. I mean, that is
really friggin' bad. I agree.
Really, really,
well,
really bad.
It's tough because, you know, you look at teams in this conference, they have chances to really help themselves and they don't. You know, Ole Miss has a chance to beat Florida. They don't. They end up losing that game. They're not really in contention for a bit. LSU had a chance to win at Kentucky, terribly conducted last couple of minutes of the game for them. They end up losing. They're really still in search of any sort of a signature profile win. Yeah, they did beat Kentucky at home. I don't think that's going to be enough for them.
We could be back down to 2 SEC bids.
I'm thinking that's it. That's what I was saying. I mean,
well, yeah. I mean, it's funny because, and it's hard to defend the SEC because Georgia's 9-5, and you look at Georgia. You look at Georgia's profile. Georgia's alone in 3rd by 2 games in the SEC.
Yes.
And this is a Georgia team that lost to Davidson, lost to Temple, lost to Auburn on the road, lost to Georgia Tech. I mean, just not good games at all. But you go down the list. I mean, Tennessee's obviously got flaws, as we mentioned. Arkansas, Missouri,
LSU. Does Tennessee have anything good?
Tennessee
a neutral floor win against Xavier.
Tennessee beat Virginia at home by 25.
Okay, yeah, there's that.
And they also won at LSU. I mean, that is something.
Yeah.
But to get swept by Texas A&M is really, really bad. Like, that should disqualify you from tournament play right there. So, anyway.
And it might.
And it very well might. Yeah, a 2-bid SEC would be fascinating. I doubt it will happen. I'm sure somebody will rise out of that mediocrity, but the chance that it won't happen is absolutely there.
Well, just food for thought, they left a 12-6 Kentucky team out last year. A 12-6 Ole Miss team wins the SEC tournament, only gets a 12 seed. That indicates that they may not have gotten in at all without the automatic bid. The 7-7 teams, it's a weaker league this year, and those 7-7 teams cannot get to 12-6. Check my math on that, but I'm pretty sure I'm right.
We'll have our people follow up on that. Okay. Let's jump over to the Big East. Interesting, getting more interesting. Creighton's still with a half-game lead on Villanova, and Creighton survives a little bit of a scare today. They end up beating Seton Hall only by a point, but they're back on a four-game winning streak and really looking good heading down the stretch. Villanova, same sort of deal. They survived the potential problem at Providence in two overtimes. They beat St. John's at home. Both of those teams had to take care of business down the stretch, but I think they're both in the discussion for one seeds at this stage.
Oh, really?
Whoa. I do.
Whoa.
No, I'm serious.
Oh, no, I know you're serious.
You are, with the Big East this year, you are just blowing David Griggs' mind.
Well, I don't understand why. I mean, look at the profiles. I mean, you know, look at Creighton. They're 28th overall schedule in the country. They have a good cadre of wins. They swept Villanova. You know, you look at Villanova and what they were able to accomplish by beating, Kansas and Iowa in the non-conference, yeah. And, you know, as good as they've looked overall, they've only lost three games, period, on the season.
I can see it with Villanova because they have an extremely deep profile, but ironically, even though Creighton beat them twice, I can't see it with Creighton.
No. Well, I was going to be controversial and say if either Creighton or Nova goes for the double, like wins the conference and the conference tournament, I could see them up on the two line, and I thought you all were going to yell at me for having a Big East team that high.
I really think Villanova's in very good shape for a one seed, and let me be clear, I don't think they're both in line for a one seed. I think one or the other would be, and I think Villanova's got a better chance.
Here's an interesting tidbit. When I went through and did an adjusted average win and yes. Opponent for all the teams out there, in terms of adjusted win, based on the location of the game and using Ken Pomeroy's ratings, Villanova actually had the third best average win of all teams in the country.
I believe it.
So, I mean, they have a very, very good schedule, very deep schedule.
Yeah. You know, I think the rest of the Big East is really getting more muddled. I mean, we made fun of the SEC for having a bunch of 7-7 teams. You get below Creighton and Villanova, Xavier's now 8-6, Marquette's 8-6, St. John's is 8-7, Providence is 8-7, Georgetown's 7-8. All those teams are not making it. I did like the fact that Providence was able to come back today and beat Butler. Now, you really have to beat Butler because Butler's not very good this year. But Providence, they probably have to go 2-1 over these last three. They need to win their next two. They need to beat Seton Hall. They need to beat Marquette. They can lose on the road to Creighton. I wouldn't be too worried about that. But that would get them to 20 wins. It would guarantee them 10-8 in the conference. I think that'd probably be enough to get them in the tournament. So,
based on what?
Based on the rest of the teams that are trying to get in the tournament.
I think Providence is... I can't see them getting in without a win against Creighton.
You look at overall strength of schedule, they have the 23rd toughest schedule in the country. The fact that they've beaten Creighton, they've got okay wins, not great wins by any means, but okay wins besides that. I think in a normal year where we're looking at quality and that's it, I think that they have a harder time getting in, but there just aren't that many quality teams. And just having beaten Creighton by the margin that they did, you know, going 10-8 in what will end up being a top five league, I think that's going to be enough for them to get into the field. So we'll see.
Well, I will say this: go ahead, put them in, take out Gonzaga. I'll take that trade off.
Yeah.
Oh,
well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gonzaga.
Anyway.
Oh Lord.
Anything else from the past week that you guys wanted to discuss that you thought was worth looking at? David, let me start with you.
The Atlantic 10, I mean, whereas I thought it was nuts that you had 6 or 7 Big East teams in, you probably think it's equally nuts that I have 6 from the Atlantic 10 in.
I just really
like this conference. I think the UMass-VCU game was a great game to watch. I think SLU is obviously a slam dunk. They're looking at a protected seed. I don't see them getting higher than the 3 line, probably not even that high, but they're really good. I think VCU, UMass, and George Washington are solid. So there's those four. I think Dayton, who's won 7 in a row, including games on the road, which is something that happens very, very rarely over the past 3 or 4 decades. They might actually play their way in. They're trending up. I have them outside the bubble. Richmond, I think, is toast. But St. Joe's, I think that, and again, I realize that it might not be a popular pick among us, but there's something about their profile. The fact, when I look at their profile and I look at the number of games away from home and I look at some of the selections that have been made in recent years, the St. Joe's fits the kind of team that the committee has been selecting.
Here's my problem with St. Joe's. And
I have lots of problems with St. Joe's, but
My one biggest problem with St. Joe's, if you compare them to Providence, who we were just talking to, Providence has beaten Creighton, who's in the running for a 3-seed, a 2-seed, maybe a 1 if everything breaks right. The best win that St. Joe's has is worse than that. It's a VCU team that's going to struggle to get into the top half of the bracket. That's it. That's the only win of note that they have. I think what's going to end up happening is when St. Joe's and Dayton play on Tuesday, that's an elimination game for all intents and purposes.
Okay. And it could be you're right. I just think, and here, you all have turned me into a conspiracy theorist over the years. That's what's happened, because I used to just think they looked at the best teams. But when I look at the selection of Iona and Middle Tennessee, I actually think, as crazy as this is, that when a bunch of athletic directors get into a room, one of the things they look at is how a team's scheduled. And I think that they're going to look favorably at St. Joe's. As crazy as it is that they went on the road to Delaware, they're going to be like, well, was it Delaware or Vermont? I think it was Delaware. But
Vermont.
Vermont. I mean, I could see them rewarding St. Joe's on the sheer number of games away from home, and that's not fair. That's not how you should select a team, but I can't help but think when I look at recent selections that St. Joe's might be looked at favorably. That's, I don't know, agreed. Well, you obviously disagree, but...
I mean, I'm not even looking at it that closely. I just don't think they have the wins. And I think as weak as the bubble is, I think if you look at them versus even Dayton, I think Dayton at least has an out-of-conference win or two of note. I mean, Dayton's beaten Gonzaga, they've beaten Cal, they've beaten Iona. I just don't see that on St. Joe's resume. And I think that Dayton's
beat Ole Miss on the road. I mean,
right.
Dayton's profile's not bad.
Right. Kyle, you want to jump in on this A-10 talk at all?
No, I tend to agree with David. I don't think it's an either-or scenario. I think most of them are getting in, or most of those teams we discussed. I don't know if it'll be 6. I think it'll be at least 5, but I actually think it could end up being 6.
I think it could be as low as 4. I really do.
Yeah, I think it'll be at least 5.
Okay.
I'm looking at some of the things that, I don't know, just looking at the trends the last couple of years, there's a lot of these A-10 profiles I think are going to get put in. And it may not be on the basis of wins alone. Yeah, you're right. I don't know that St. Joe's would make it on that basis, but I think that, you know, if you combine, you know, games away from home with decent out-of-conference schedules, I think they're going to get the benefit of the doubt, especially with Dayton getting hot here recently.
Well, we'll see what happens with that. Kyle, any other things from the last week that you feel are worth mentioning? Anything from the Pac-12, for instance?
Well, I was going to mention the ACC briefly.
That's fine.
It's interesting what's happening there, because we're kind of basically seeing a divide. I know a lot of people were trying to find ways to put NC State in or Florida State in, but I think we've pretty much settled on 5 teams from the ACC, and I think that's all it's going to be. And what's really interesting to me is I know our compadre Chad Sherwood brought this up. Pittsburgh is in no danger of missing the tournament, but where the hell do you see this team? They're 1-6 against the top 50 and 19-0 on every other game outside of the top 50.
Well,
just a very bizarre profile.
When you look at their 19, I believe it is, top 300 wins, or is it not quite 19? I mean, that's pretty impressive. That's as many as some teams on the one line have.
That's funny. I will say they have dropped in every bracket projection I've done. I didn't do one this week yet, but right now, I mean, you know, I they're probably a 9 or a 10 seed at most for me at this stage.
That's exactly where I have them.
Yeah, I mean, they're just We complained about Providence earlier, for instance. I mean, where are the wins? The best win that Pittsburgh has is a neutral court win against Stanford, and that was back in November 26th. They haven't done what they needed to do to be taken seriously. They've lost 5 of their last 7. Now, they'll win some games here this week. They damn well better. They got to go to Boston College. They got to go to Notre Dame, and they got North Carolina State at home. They really cannot afford to lose any of those 3 games. I mean, it is plausible. If they were to lose 3 of their last 4, I could see them not getting in at all. I mean, it's probably unlikely, but it's not unheard of that they wouldn't get in because they don't really have the quality on their resume.
No, they don't even have depth of wins. If they were to lose like 3 in a row here to end the regular season, I agree. I actually think it is possible they could miss out because they just don't have enough wins. The one thing they have going for them now is they don't have bad losses. Yeah. But if they were to suddenly pick up 2 or 3 of them in a row to end the season, they could be in trouble.
Yeah. I will say, if we're going to stick in the ACC, Florida State, they have to win their last 3. That's Georgia Tech at home, Boston College on the road, and then Syracuse at home. They do that. They're 10-8 in the conference. They're 19-11 overall. They have a win over Syracuse. They have a win on the road at Pitt. They have a neutral court win against VCU, and they have a neutral court win against UMass. I tend to think that will get them in. David, what do you think?
Yeah, I believe that certainly will.
So, but I think it will absolutely take that Syracuse win getting them into the field at this stage. I think they've done themselves too much damage over the course of the last month and a half. The other one of note, I guess, not of note, but the other one worth watching is Clemson. They're 8-6 in the conference. They've got Wake Forest on the road, Maryland at home, Miami at home, Pitt at home. It's actually a pretty fortunate schedule for them. If they could win the last 4 games, 12-6 in the ACC, they'd have a win against Pitt. They'd have a win on the road against Florida State. They'd have that home win against Duke. I think they're in at that stage too. So, Kyle, you've talked for a while about, you know, where are the bids going to come from in these big conferences. I think this we're starting to see potential end games emerge.
Yeah, we are. I really think, and this is what's working against a team like Clemson. I mean, Clemson, again, I know I'm being a dead horse here, but terrible out-of-conference schedule. And I really, really think that we've seen the last 3 years there has been a huge emphasis on that. And I think, I think you're right. The good news for Clemson is that they have plenty of good opportunities here down the stretch that they could earn themselves a bid. They could, get themselves in, if they pick up a couple more, quality wins. But the flip side is, if they don't pick up those wins, they have a terrible out-of-conference schedule. They're probably dead in the water at that point. Yeah. And I think that you're going to see
close calls. I mean, they've been really close to that good win, but haven't gotten it yet. I don't know. I mean, it's if they win all these last 4 games, but go out in the first game of the ACC tournament and not even make the quarters, that might be ground because they would be 12-7. That might be grounds for having them left out, but with a weak bubble, I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, let's jump forward. Look at the games coming up this week, guys. Syracuse, Maryland. We talked about this. I like Syracuse in this game. I just don't think Maryland's got the quality to pick up the victory here. The only other game really of note on Monday, and I'll let you guys tackle these in tandem, Oklahoma at Kansas. Again, I don't see Oklahoma being able to stick with the Jayhawks. I think Kansas clinches their 98th consecutive Big 8 title or Big 12 title. David, any differences on that?
No.
Kyle?
Not the way Kansas is playing, no.
No. So we move forward to Tuesday, a slightly more populous evening as far as basketball is concerned. Kyle, let me start with you. Iowa at Minnesota. Minnesota absolutely has to have this game. Iowa has to be wondering what the hell happened at the end of that Wisconsin game. They had it in their hands. They let it slip away. This is not an easy place for anybody to play in the Big Ten. Do you like Iowa's chances?
This is no slight against Iowa, but I actually think Minnesota's going to rebound and get it done. They've certainly looked – it was a very Jekyll and Hyde game they had against Ohio State and Illinois, for that matter. Both games, they jumped out to huge leads to start the game. They were up 10.5 against Ohio State and up 8.5 against Illinois, I think. They end up losing both by double digits. Very strange second halves for Minnesota. I think they're a better team than they're playing right now. I think they're going to rebound and beat Iowa on Tuesday.
David, let me move over to your beloved A-10. We've got that aforementioned Dayton-St. Joe's game coming up. Who
Very
do you like?
Very bubblicious. I think St. Joe's is going to get it done in this one. I mean, they're at home, and Dayton, although they have some road wins, their most recent one was a Herculean effort to overcome a 12-point deficit against mighty Duquesne in front of a crowd of dozens. So, I mean, there's a lot more on the line here. It's a game both teams desperately need because, again, I mean, I have them in, but I have them right on the bubble, both of them. So, in St. Joe's, I just think they're the better team at home, and they're going to get it done in this one.
David, one more for you before we move off of Tuesday, because there actually aren't that many great games on Tuesday either. Kansas State at Texas Tech. We think Kansas State is safe, but they really could use road wins. Can they pull one off in Lubbock?
No, it's on the road. If it were in, like, what Kansas State needs to do is to apply for a waiver to see if they can play their NCAA tournament games in Manhattan, Kansas. Other than that, they're not getting past their first game, and it might not even be a close game.
I mean, if...
I want to echo that prediction. I think they're going to lose, and not just because we're poking fun of Kansas State on the road this year, but Texas Tech is playing really well at home
right
now.
They
should have had Kansas beat, and of course they beat Oklahoma State. I think Texas Tech wins, but I think it's because not just because of Kansas State struggling, but Texas Tech is playing really well now.
It's amazing to me that a team is going to make the NCAA tournament, and the only games they will have won outside the state of Kansas were games against Long Beach State, Tulane, and Texas Christian.
Well,
I mean, good Lord.
Yeah, expanding the field to 68 was not at all necessary.
They would be in regardless. They're not in the bottom four.
It was not at all necessary.
Well, one of many things that hasn't been necessary. Anyway, Wednesday, as we look at the games on schedule, Kyle, I don't know what to make of this Stanford team at this stage. Maybe you can help me a little bit. I mean, they just throttled UCLA yesterday. I think they're safely in at this point. They're 9-5. They have to travel. They have their Arizona swing this week. So they take on an Arizona State team that was getting absolutely henpecked to death by Utah. Did they end up losing that game? Anybody know?
I didn't see the score even, no.
I think they – hold on, I've got it. Yeah, they lost 86-63 to Utah.
Yeah,
86-63 to Utah. So Stanford goes to Arizona State.
And to our friend Lee Del Vecchio, who's watching or listening at some point, no, Utah is not getting in.
Still not in. No, still not in at all. But Stanford at Arizona State. Arizona State pretty much has to have this game. I mean, they're getting to a point here where they're running out of options for good wins. They've fallen out of 8-6 in conference. I don't know what's going to get you in and what's not going to get you in the Pac-12, but I get the feeling that if you finish below Utah in the standings, you might not get in.
Yeah, it's not recommended.
A tough team to deal with. I watched them 3 or 4 times this year, and I actually missed most of the Arizona game, so maybe that's just my luck. But the 3 or 4 times I've seen them, I watch this team, and it's like I know that they've got the profile to get in right now, but, man, that – they look better on paper than they do in person.
Yeah. A couple other games from Wednesday as we wrap things up here. David, we've got Baylor at Texas. We're feeling better about Baylor now. Do we feel good enough about them to predict a win in Austin?
I don't think so. This should be a fun one. It normally is when these two play. I don't want to say it's a big rivalry, but it's a rivalry, and it always is a fun game. But I'm feeling better about Baylor. I think if Baylor can finish 8-10 in league play, they'll be in the field. This is one of their 4 remaining games. If they win it, great. But if they don't, I still think they're safe.
Yeah. Final one from Wednesday before we wrap things up. We're kind of retreading certain ground here. But Nebraska at Illinois. You're picking this game, David Griggs.
Nebraska. I just really like how they're playing now. It's not going to be easy because it's on the road. Nebraska hasn't been the best road team for most of the season, but they're starting to play better, and they did go up to Michigan State and win. Illinois is not that good. Nebraska is good. I think Nebraska wins it.
Kyle?
This is going to surprise you, but I'm actually going to hold my breath, and I'm going to take Illinois. I think... I think Illinois is going to show signs here down the stretch of playing better basketball. They're not as bad as their record. I think that Nebraska is not ready to go on the road and win this type of game just yet. If they do, though, make no mistake, the Nebraska bandwagon will be running out of the station at full steam ahead from here on out if that happens, because I think this is the game they need to show they are ready for tournament.
Yeah. Well, they got to win this one. I agree. They lose this one, and that might be all she wrote. But anyway, guys, good show as always. Really enjoyed it, and thanks to all of you for tuning in, either live or on the podcast. We'll be back next week with more Bracket Racket.
It wasn't good the 3 minutes I was muted.
It was actually maybe the best show period that we've had, David.
Well, not when I was muted.
Yeah,
people
it was.
Couldn't hear me.
That's yeah. Anyway, for David Griggs, for Kyle Lamb, I'm Galen Clavio. Thanks for joining us here on the Bracket Racket, folks. We'll catch you on the flip side. So long, everybody.
We're Huskers.